Hey, y'all. Welcome to Biscuits and Jam from Southern Living. I'm your host, Sid Evans. And in this episode, I'm talking to a comedian and Instagram star who made a name for herself by having some very funny conversations with the Lord. Ellen Scarmetti was born and raised in Ripley, Mississippi, not far from Memphis, in a family that was devoted to the Southern Baptist Church. For Ellen, a person of faith, but also an aspiring comedian, this turned out to be great source material, as did all the characters in her small southern town. During the pandemic, she started posting videos that all started with, "Hey Jesus, it's me." And then she would launch into gossipy monologues about her neighbors, critiques of a cousin's potato salad, or famously, what would have happened if Queen Elizabeth had died in the South. Now she's got a new book that takes its name from those viral hits and expands it a bit. Hey Jesus, it's me. I have questions, comments, and concerns. Ellen lives in Birmingham now, so we got to do this one in the Southern Living offices, and she was just as charming and funny in person as she is on Instagram. We talked about why her yeast rolls are controversial, what it's been like getting back to stand-up after a fruitful detour through social media, and having what she calls a true Southern church lady for a mother, all in this week's Biscuits and Jam. Ellen Scarmetti, welcome to Biscuits and Jam.
Thank you for having me. This is a treat.
So, Ellen, we're here in Alabama doing this live at our offices, and you've been in Birmingham for a while now. Talk to me about your hometown and your connection to Birmingham.
So, we've lived here 8 years, and I was born and raised in North Mississippi in a little town called Ripley. My husband and I lived in Jackson for 13 years after we graduated college, and we got married in Jackson and then realized that everyone we knew in Jackson lived there because they were either born there or they had family there. And we were the only people of our friends that weren't born in Jackson and didn't have family in Jackson. So we were like, maybe we should move.
Yeah.
So we first moved to Nashville. We lived in Nashville for a year. And now I joke that Jackson was too little, Nashville was too big, Birmingham is just right.
It is.
It is. It is just right.
It's kind of like Nashville, you know, 10 years ago or something. It's not too crowded. I mean, knock wood, knock something.
Yeah. It's not. And I told my husband, too, it was so hard for us to find a house in Nashville. But then I was meeting people who said, oh, my gosh, my house has doubled in value, or my house has tripled in value since I moved to Nashville. But they were 10 years ahead. And I said, you know, Tim, we are 10 years too late to live in Nashville at our income level. So we need to find a place where we're either right on time or a little bit early for a housing boom.
Yeah.
Birmingham was just down the road, and we loved that we could still have great restaurants. We could still have great schools for our kids. I was closer to my family in North Mississippi. We could be closer to his family in South Mississippi. So we've been here for 8 years, and we realized about 2 years ago, we looked at it and said, wow, we could live anywhere we wanted to. If we wanted to pick up and move, we could, but we don't want to. We really love being in Birmingham. So even though my husband has a remote job and I can do content from any backyard,
yeah,
because that's where I film most of my content, we just love it here. So we're staying.
Well, I love having you here.
Thank you.
It's fun to do these in person. And congrats on the book.
Thank you.
It's called Hey Jesus, It's Me.
Yes.
Just like everything you're posting on Instagram and TikTok. And I love the subtitle, which is I Have Questions, Comments, and Concerns.
Who doesn't have questions, comments, and concerns for Jesus? Like, just, is this how you meant it to be? And my goal was just to remind people that you can laugh and you can have a good time with Jesus and you can have a good time with your faith. A lot of times we are convicted and it could be a very serious journey, but you know, you can laugh and have fun.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily something you see in church a whole lot. I mean, I guess there's ministers that are funny and that'll crack jokes in their sermons, but that's not overall the vibe that you see in a lot of churches. Tell me about your church community and how they've kind of reacted to the book and to everything you're posting.
Well, of course, you're going to have people online who make comments. I can't believe you would do this, and this is sacrilege, and whatever, delete posts. That's fine.
yeah.
But truly, so much of mine comes from growing up with what I call a true Southern church lady for a mother.
Yeah.
And a lot of the comedy comes from listening to my mother and her girlfriends plan church socials, plan church gatherings and get-togethers, and the things you hear the little old ladies say in the church vestibule in the 80s. That is where so much of my comedy comes from, is all the things that happen before you get into the serious church service.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to speak to.
So there is actually a lot that's really funny about church. You just got to kind of peel back the layers a little bit.
Yes. I say this in my stand-up show, that one day I came home from church and I asked my mother, what are birthing hips?
Yeah.
And I was 10. And she said, how do you know about birthing hips? Well, I was leaving Sunday school and a group of little old ladies were coming out of adult Sunday school class. And they just stopped and told me, now, Ellen, those birthing hips are going to come in handy one day. Yeah, so there was a lot of comedy.
When you were 10.
When I was 10. When I was 10. And the jokes on them, I have a skinny pelvis.
Uh-huh.
And then I asked my doctor, I said, are you flirting with me? Because I'm having this man's baby and this is not the time. One of my mother's friends still talks about how she was making tea for something and she had let it come to a boil. And she said, Ellen, your mamaw came in and saw that that was boiling. She said, you would have thought that I was about to set the church on fire because I had boiled the tea. And so anytime something comes up, she's like, well, don't boil the tea around your grandmother.
Yes.
So you know, there's humor. There's
a, everything.
There's a lot of humor that happens inside the goings on of a church. Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about where you came from and your hometown. I mean, you know, this is your hometown now, but you grew up in Ripley, Mississippi, which is really not far from Memphis. I'm from Memphis.
Okay.
So yes. It's right down the road from Memphis in
yes.
Northwest Mississippi. Tell me a little bit about your hometown and the house and the neighborhood where you grew up.
So my parents, I'm so lucky, they still live in the house that I grew up in.
Oh,
which
really?
Is so great. I almost cried the other day. My mother called and told me, Dad and I are getting rid of our landline.
Yeah.
Why would you do this to me? Are you going to want me to pack up my room next?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? So I'm very lucky that my children are getting to have Christmas and celebrations in the same room where my brother and I got to have Christmases and got to have celebrations. But Ripley, I graduated with about 95 kids. I tell everybody that'll listen that William Faulkner's great-granddaddy is buried behind the Pizza Hut. And that I'm from the true land of Faulkner. Oxford claims him because that's where he lived and did most of his work, but that's where his family was originally from. So it was a great small community. I grew up in the First Baptist Church, Ripley, and when they say it takes a village, I had my mother, but then I also had my friends' moms and my mom's friends that we all just took care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking before we went on camera about what it was like when the ladies got together and they put together everyone's weddings and did all of that. So it was fun, but it was a lot of work watching those women making cheese straws and making
right.
cantaloupe balls. I mean, my mother was a master of fruit displays.
Really?
Before there were charcuterie boards. I mean, my mother, she could do a bride and groom and a watermelon.
Wow. Okay. So that's a special talent.
Yes. But then like before it was somebody's wedding, the refrigerator would be full of cubes of cheese and fruit and all this stuff that you could not touch. But so it was fun.
So talk to me about the church that you went to. What'd you say the name of it was?
First Baptist.
First
Ripley.
Baptist
yes.
in Ripley.
Yes.
So this has to be something that you've drawn on a lot for your comedy. I mean, this is what you grew up with. I mean, kind of set the scene for me. What does it look and feel like on a typical Sunday?
Okay, a typical Sunday, your mom wakes you up. You still oversleep. You go into your pantyhose drawer, and you try to find a pair of pantyhose that doesn't have a runner in it.
Okay.
And then you can't. All of them have a runner. And so then you look for a dress that's long enough to cover up the runner in your pantyhose. And then you look for clear nail polish and you can't find any. So all you can find is pink and you put some pink on your runner and you just pray that no one, that the nail polish holds it. And then you've got to put on your slip and then you've got to put on your camisole and you've got on your pantyhose and all of that. And then you put on your dress and you're sweating and you go into church. And first you have Sunday school, which is so fun because you get about 15 minutes of a lesson. And then you're just
hanging out with your friends.
Just hanging out with your friends. You're just talking to your Sunday school teacher. And then you've got about 15 minutes before big church starts, which was your big sermon. And we all called it big church. Oh, I also remember when I was a teenager, we finally got a McDonald's when I was in the fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Robert Donovan, who has passed away, owned the McDonald's. And so we would always have sausage and biscuits before youth Sunday school. I mean, in the 90s, a McDonald's sausage and biscuit was a delicacy.
Oh, it was, yeah, a special thing, yeah.
Right. I mean, when the McDonald's opened, they opened school late that day because it was the first real restaurant that Ripley had. And the band played and the cheerleaders were there and they had late opening of school so everyone could go get breakfast.
That is so crazy to think about that.
Yes. And then the poor kids who were like, well, my mom said we're going to go tonight. And we were like, oh, your mom must not love you because she didn't take you to McDonald's for breakfast this morning when they opened. So then you had your big church.
Yeah.
And then for us, the youth, we all sat in the back, but my mother and my dad had their pew at the front of the church. And I can still picture my mother looking back to me to make sure that I was in position at church and acting right and that I hadn't tried to miss big church or go home or hadn't done anything. But she would always look back and check to make sure that I was there. And I always was. Because I was scared of her wrath if I tried to be sneaky and miss.
Who's the funniest person in your family other than you?
My brother. My brother has a great dry sense of humor. And he also, he loves comedians. So I love sending him like new comedians that are fine or people that I love. But our whole family's funny. When I think back of memories of our family, like we're laughing. Uh-huh. You know, everyone really had a sense of humor. So yeah, I grew up with just a ton of laughter
in
our family.
It's in the gene pool.
Yes, it's absolutely in the gene pool. I'm the only person that got nerdy about it and went and took comedy classes to try to perfect it. But yeah, we're all funny.
So there's such a connection between church and food, especially in the South. You talk in the book about how your mom is really an incredible cook. And
yes.
I think you called her the queen of Southern cooking or something like that.
Listen, she was the Daily Journal's cook of the week.
Yeah, which is a big deal.
Daily Journal, for those of you who don't know, I mean, that is the Tupelo newspaper. Okay? That is a regional paper.
So tell me about some of her specialties. Like, what are some of the things that you grew up with that she was kind of known for?
I can't think of anything that my mother could not make. Okay? One time, my grandmother said, oh, just bring ice and bring cups. And my mother said, I'm bringing something. And she said, well, bring a salad. And I can remember my mother brought every salad known to man. 7-layer salad, jello salad, pretzel salad, just every salad you could imagine just to prove the point, like I will be bringing food to the family functions. But the place where she really shined was in her baking. She was such a great baker. I came in one day from school and she had made 4 coconut cakes and then there were pound cakes. And I said, Mama, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? And she said, somebody could be dying right now. I don't have anything in my freezer. So she was just getting it ready. But what happened, I talk about Sugary's Bakery in New Albany, that's just 18 miles away from Ripley. I said to her one day, I said, Mom, you don't bake as many layer cakes as you used to. And she said, Sugary's makes exactly what I would make. Like they make Southern layer cakes, so I don't have to make those. So now I can make other stuff. Mm. And I just keep a Sugary's in my freezer. So if I need a layer cake, I just use theirs. But then she can cook all of her other stuff.
Well, you talk in the book about how she made some really good yeast rolls.
Yes.
But this kind of became an issue.
It was an issue.
In the family because there's a little bit of competition around the rolls. Is that right?
She took them to my grandmother's, which was her mother-in-law's. And everything was fine except my grandfather, who I called Papa. Papa said, Jenny May, these are the best rolls you ever made. And they were my mother's. And so that...
didn't land
that
well.
That did not land. And so... finally, I said, Mother, like, why can't we bring your yeast rolls? They are so good. And she said, well, remember, you know, he said these are the best rolls you've ever made. Well, I was in college and I said, well, you show me how to make them and they'll be mine. And so she called her and said, you know, Ellen wants to bring the rolls for dinner. Are you okay with that? And she's like, yeah, if you think she's ready. So she showed me her recipe and I made them on cue. My grandfather goes, Jenny May, you've done it again. And we had a plan. We said, no matter what, these are mine. My mother, who, you know, the Lord's not done with her. The Lord is still working on her. She's close. She's not ready. Just 2 seconds. Here's my recipe. Because my grandmother was like, oh, well, that wasn't me. That was Ellen. She was so happy to succeed that these were my rolls. And then my mom goes, that's my recipe. You never let me bring the rolls. I was like, Mommy, you just messed it up. You couldn't.
Somebody should have given your grandfather maybe a tip that he didn't need to make that comment.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lesson there that we women, we plan, but we forget to let the men in on what's happening. And so they don't mean to mess us up, but they will.
Oh, well, it's worth it. If the rolls are that good, then, you know.
They really are. And I put the recipe in the book. If you can't do it, do flowers at your church. If you can't follow that recipe, and it's okay. Not everybody can follow a recipe card recipe, but my mother would use the dough and roll it out, and that's how she would do her cinnamon rolls. So, yeah, they were amazing.
So, thinking about the holidays around your house, this was a big deal.
Big deal.
Big crowd?
Yes, especially when I was younger and everybody was alive.
Uh-huh, yeah.
We have less of a crowd now that some people are... You know,
yeah, have moved
so
on.
Rudely moving on.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I was little, it was always a big crowd. And my whole family lived in Ripley or just in Walnut, Mississippi, the next town over. So it was just a lot of traveling because you had to catch everyone. You know, now you have people who say, oh, we're going to go do Thanksgiving with my family and then Christmas with his family. And then they may flip flop it. But when everybody lives in the same town, you are expected to do, you know, Christmas Eve at this grandmother's and Christmas Eve with that grandmother.
Yeah.
And then do something.
It's a full schedule.
It's a full schedule. It is full. And that is how actually my mother started to make the Christmas celebration for her side of the family. She made it a breakfast for dinner because she realized that between all of the Thanksgivings and all of the Christmases, everyone was tired of that traditional holiday meal. And then that is really what got everyone excited about coming because they were going to get homemade biscuits and chocolate gravy and sausage gravy and red eye gravy and
all the gravies,
all the gravies you could ever imagine. And so that made everybody excited because they were going to get to see everybody, but get a different meal.
Mm. Wow. Sounds like a Super Bowl at your house.
It was. And my mother, it was almost like the day after Thanksgiving, she just never stopped making things. Like there were just things that she had to have. She made a fruit cake that everyone loved. I can still remember I was coming home from college and she said, could you stop by a liquor store and get me some brandy? Because she didn't want to go in the liquor store.
She didn't want to be seen in the liquor store?
No. A good God-fearing Baptist in a liquor... Are you crazy? And the town was dry?
But she needed it for that fruitcake or for something.
She needed it. Yeah. She would need it for something, yes. And so she was like, listen, just on your way home, get me some brandy or get me some sherry to cook, just something to cook with, okay? And I was like, you don't want to go get it? Shut up. Just get it for me.
Well, there's probably one liquor store in town or the one that everybody went to, so you're going to be seen.
Ripley was dry until about 7 or 8 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So there was zero alcohol. If you were seen in Tupelo buying alcohol, that news would beat you home, as we say.
Yeah. So, Ellen, I want to talk a little bit about how you kind of launched your career. And some of this has to do with people moving on.
Yes.
And it has to do with football season.
Yes.
And about 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, Queen Elizabeth was moving on.
And here I am.
And so you'd been creating content and you'd been doing a lot of stuff on social media. But a lot of things kind of came together in that moment.
Yes.
And you did a series of posts about if the Queen had died in the South.
Yes.
Talk to me about that and what brought all that together and why do you think it took off the way it did?
Well, I had been posting for 9 months with not a lot of traction, but enough to keep me going. And I tell people, if you're doing this, do not stop. Like your viral reel, it could be the next one, but if you stop, you'll never know which one it is. My husband and I were going to the Little London in Homewood, that has now closed. I don't know if you remember, they had a double-decker bus, and one of them was from London, and they created like a traditional pub. People were going there to watch Arsenal games because my husband loves Arsenal, and that was helping us survive until SEC football could get started. And my husband said, hey, there are no soccer matches this weekend. And I said, why? And he said, well, because the Queen died, so out of respect, they're not playing any games this week or this weekend. And I said, well, good Lord, if she had died in Ripley, she would already be in the ground and we would just be carrying on about our days. And he said, not everybody does it like y'all, because he is amazed at how fast we get it done. And so on my way to work, I did a very quick If the Queen Died in the South and just recreated the phone calls I've heard my mother make throughout my childhood, which is, she's not doing good. If she goes today, we can get it done tomorrow. But we've got this going on. Like, how are we going to work this out? Because we can't, this is happening. And people said, you're so rude. You wouldn't say that if it was your brother. Well, this isn't my brother. I've never met the Queen. So I don't know that she's offended by me. And, you know, if you're, you know, 100 and passing away, we're going to talk about
plans.
Is she going to make it today? And our freezers are ready. And I love that some of the comments, some people would say, I always wondered how y'all did it so fast. Y'all just have food in your freezer. I said, we've got food in the freezer. Their dress is in the back of the closet, ready to go in a McRae's bag, probably. Do you remember McRae's department store?
No.
We had a McRae's in Mississippi. And so her funeral dress has already been picked out. She's probably already written her obituary. She's already gone to the funeral home and picked out all of her music. So you just have to like press a button and get the funeral ready. And my mother has even told me, your daddy and I have already planned our funerals. So you'll just let them know when we've passed and we have it all planned and paid for. So
right.
All you two have to do is show up and smile and greet everyone.
And there are a lot of people that might think that that's kind of morbid, but really in the South, I mean, it is, you know.
It's unavoidable. You know,
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. So why not make sure that it happens the way you want it to happen? I can remember at my grandmother's funeral, she had the most beautiful setup. Like she had a beautiful spray and then she had two flowers, two pillars that coordinated on either side. And during the funeral, my mother leaned over and went, you see that? I want that. That's what I want at my funeral. But then also put one of my quilts over my casket too. I want one of my quilts. Okay. I'll point it out when we get to the house, which quilt I want.
And you're expected to be taking notes.
Yes. Yeah. And so I know that we will have two arrangements flanking the casket. One of her handmade quilts and then a beautiful arrangement that matches the two. And then all of the other arrangements will just be on the side of the church.
You know, there was a great book that came out, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Being Dead is No Excuse.
Being Dead is No Excuse.
Yes.
Which is written by two women from Mississippi.
Yes.
Gaydon Metcalf and Charlotte Hayes. And they did a great job of exactly what you're talking about.
I was so fortunate that when I had my stint, I worked at the Everyday Gourmet in Jackson, Mississippi, which if you don't know which direction your career should go, if you were in the 90s, you should go work at the Everyday Gourmet and you'll just meet some of the most wonderful people in Jackson. They came and did a cooking demonstration. And my publisher and my book agent said, like, Ellen, this funeral stuff is so great. Would you want to do a funeral book? And I said, funeral book has been done.
Yeah.
I said, the funniest and best funeral book in the world has been done. The guidebook is there. I will not be competing with it, but I will talk about my funeral experiences because like when my mother-in-law passed away, my husband's Catholic and in South Mississippi, and my mother was on the way and she filled up the cooler with food to bring for the funeral. And I called her and I said, Mother, slow your horses. It's not for another 10 days. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I said, he wants to wait.
So your husband comes from a different part of Mississippi and they do it differently.
They do it differently. Yeah. And then also for the Catholic Church, you have your funeral in the Catholic Church. Well, the church, if they have something going on, it's like, well, we can plan your funeral on this day. they're not just ready to just open up the church for a funeral at any moment. She happened to have a friend whose daughter was getting married in Tuscaloosa, and they were best friends. And she said, please, I've got to get her married, and please don't do this until I can get back. So we had about 11 or so days in between. And then my sweet mother called me and said, this is the best. Alan, do I need to get your daddy one of those beanies? And I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, he's Catholic. Don't they wear those beanies? I said, Mama, that's called a yarmulke. And that is the Jewish faith. But I love that my parents were like, whatever it is, we're going to do it.
We're doing it.
We're doing it. And so my husband still is like, I wish you just would have said yes. Like, why? I wish you would have said, yes, Mom, I'll have him one. I'll meet you in the parking lot. He was like, if your dad would have walked in that church in a yarmulke, that would have healed me, Ellen. That would have. And every time I thought about my mother passing, I would then get this visualization of my father-in-law. He would have healed me instantly. And I said, I'm so sorry. I should have.
Well, I love all this funeral talk.
I know. There was missing funeral humor. And here I am. Send me, Lord. I'm here.
You've got a whole chapter in the book about it. And there's a lot more where that came from. But I love it. It's important to be able to joke about it.
It is the hardest time in a person's life. But it is proof positive that with time, all things, you can find humor. We're not talking about funerals where someone has passed unexpectedly or someone has passed before what we perceive to be before their time. We are talking about when someone who has passed, who has lived a very full life, who they've completed their purpose on the earth, and we are just thankful that we got to, you know, experience life with them. And also there's a hope that we're going to see them again. So those are the funerals that we are laughing and joking about, because I asked at my great aunt's funeral, I said, why are y'all laughing? Why are y'all having a good time? You know, my aunt Eudora has died. And they're like, we don't ever see these people, Ellen. Mm. And we want to have a good time. And she would want us.
And it's a celebration of her.
Yeah. It's a celebration of her. And we never get to see each other anymore. So we're going to have a good time and send her off. So yeah,
that's right.
That was a good reminder. And that let me know I could do if the queen died in the South.
All right. Just last question for you, Ellen. What does it mean to you to be Southern?
Oh, to be Southern, it means, you know, you're nice when you don't want to be. If you're tired and you're feeling cranky, or like if so-and-so's got some party going on and you're tired and you don't want to go, you're still going to get ready and go, because they're going to do the same thing for you. And you want people at your party, so you're going to go to their party. It's, you know, putting on your lipstick when you don't want to, because it's going to make you feel better. Then you're going to see somebody you know at the grocery store. When you're having a bad day, you're still going to show people love. And it's hospitality. You know, Mississippi is the hospitality state, but I think that we're the hospitality region. So it's showing people hospitality, even if you don't feel like it, even when you're tired. And when everybody comes over, you act like you're not tired and you're smiling and just so happy that they're there, because you can rest when the crowd leaves.
Well, that's beautifully said. And congrats on everything. You've got a great book out. You're doing such funny stuff, and I hope you've got some fun dates coming up on the road.
I absolutely do. So if you go to ellenscrametti.com, I keep all my dates there. And I also have a newsletter called Committee on Committees.
Oh, even better.
Even better. Yeah. Join the Committee on Committees and get my newsletter and keep up with my dates.
Well, congrats on the book. It's called Hey Jesus, It's Me. I have questions, comments, and concerns.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for being on Biscuits and Jam.
Thank you. It's been a treat.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Ellen Scrametti. Southern Living is based in Birmingham, Alabama. Be sure to follow Biscuits and Jam on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And we would love your feedback. If you could rate this podcast and leave us a review, we would really appreciate it. You can also find past episodes and more online at southernliving.com/biscuitsandjam. Our theme song is by Sean Watkins of Nickel Creek. I hope you'll join me next week when I'll be speaking with another Mississippian, the talented musician Kirby. We'll see you then.